This is the Suns Front Office Show, presented by National Bank of Arizona, the only bank you need, and brought to you by Coors Light. This season, we climb, proud partner of the Phoenix Suns.
Our exclusive weekly visit with the interim general manager of the Phoenix Suns, James Jones, who joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline. Suns taking on the Utah Jazz tonight.
Wait, hold on. Let's do this. Who are they playing tonight?
They are playing the Utah Jazz tonight.
And what does that mean for the Jazz?
Bad news for the Jazz!
Bad news for the Jazz!
I was for you, James. I was one more just for you.
They're trying, yeah.
James. Those two are trying real hard when it comes to that. I don't know if it's working, but they're trying.
Listen,
real hard.
We got one the other night against the Cavs. We did it, and we got the win against the Cavs for you. So,
keep it coming. Don't stop. Keep it coming. We have two more home games, man. So,
yeah.
Keep it coming.
We listen. It's just with you guys. We don't do this with any other local team. It's just that special for the Suns. Bad news for the opponent. Hey, I was at the Cavs game. Team played very well. So impressed with, you know, Booker and, you know, his ability to facilitate and pass the ball. How much have you seen the growth of Devin Booker as not just a scorer, but also a facilitator, somebody can create shots for other players? How much have you seen him mature?
I mean, he's matured a lot. I know the Cavs players were raving about his ability to pass, and he probably could have had, you know, 18, 20 assists last game if we make some shots, if some of the good looks we had that didn't go down would have gone down. But his recognition is elite. You know, he's getting off the ball at the right times. He's finding guys in their shot pockets. He's striking a good balance between trying to score and facilitate. He's passing with both hands, and he's willing. And I think that's different than last year at this time, you know, when we were coming down the stretch. I think if you were to ask Devin, he would say he was definitely more focused on scoring. Right now, he's focused on making plays.
Is that the kind of under-control type performance the organization needs more out of when it comes to Josh Jackson? He played that game very under control, I thought, and was very efficient because of it.
No, that was one of Josh's best games all year. I think you saw defensively, he made a couple crucial blocks and started the break. Offensively, he took shots in rhythm, and then he just played with the calmness, like you said, discipline. That when he's playing that way, he's dynamic. And if he can continue to play that way for the rest of the year, I think we can take some momentum going into the offseason.
I don't think we give enough credit to the guys that have to go out there and get you 30 every night. It's such, you know, whether it's LeBron or Kobe or Allen Iverson, it is so hard to have to do that night in and night out over a full season, that sometimes you do need a break, and you do want to facilitate, and Devin could do that. He has proven that he could go get you 30 almost every single night. But sometimes you do want to step back and you want to see what you could do passing the basketball, and it is a mental break when you don't have to go score 30 or 40 to keep your team in the game. Did you notice that in the Cavs game?
I did. I mean, it's tough. People, you know, they underestimate how difficult it is to score 30, 35 points when the opponent knows that your team needs you to do that. So they game plan for you. They try to make it tough on you. They just try to wear you out over time. Hopefully they can wear you down enough to where you can't make those shots in the fourth quarter. So Devin's growth and maturity, he's starting to understand that he can score, but he needs his teammates early in the game to allow him to preserve himself for those clutch moments.
James Jones, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Tyler Johnson, TJ Warren, DeAndre Ayton. You've got four games left to see those guys again at some point this season. In your opinion, what are the chances that we see those guys at some point remaining in this season? Take them one by one if you want.
I mean, it's tough. You know, DeAndre, he's day-to-day. With an ankle sprain, he can show up tomorrow morning and feel great, or it can linger. I just don't know with him. TJ, I'm more optimistic, just because he's had some really good practices. You know, he's starting to move around, playing 2-on-2, but you know, hasn't really had that full 5-on-5 action yet. And so with four games left in a week, I think we can see him out there at some point. And then Tyler is just, you know, day to day. So I really can't give you anything more than that.
So it sounds like the one that you're, at least based off of how you answered that question a second ago, the most pessimistic about would be Ayton, just because you're not quite sure whether he's going to be able to recover in time?
I just think they're all in that boat. I say TJ more than the rest of those guys. I mean, those other two guys, I think TJ is probably closer.
Channing Frye, you know him well. Nice tribute to him. Is retiring. He's had a very, very good career. It was nice to see him get into the game, knock down a three. But nice little video tribute by the Suns organization. He played for the Suns for a number of years, and I thought that was special. I think he got a kick out of that. He was waving to the fans. I mean, I was about 5 feet away from him when it happened. But I thought that was pretty classy for the organization to honor Channing Frye a little bit during that game.
You know, Channing's a local kid. You know, he still comes here every summer. I mean, he loves his city. He loves the city of Phoenix. He loved his time here, and he's a champion. And what he did here in Phoenix helped him become a better player. And we talk about, you know, guys being members of the Suns family forever once they're here. We just thought it'd be a good touch to show him that his time here spent with the franchise meant a lot to us, and that we're excited that he's moving on to the next phase of his career.
All right, you'll have, you know, season will come to an end soon. You'll have exit interviews, and then you'll start the process getting ready for free agency, getting ready for the draft. Where do you see the draft process being different this year compared to previous years?
Yes, we have our core guys. We know who our core guys are. You know, we're not searching for talent. We're not just out here, just trying to see if we can find a guy or two that could be a foundational piece for us. You know, Devin, he's solidified himself as one of the best players in this league. DeAndre, through his rookie season, has shown that he has a tremendous amount of promise and a desire to be a part of this franchise for a long time. You know, Josh has shown growth. TJ, Kelly, I think we're trending the right way, and we just need to find a player that fits with this group.
When you say we're not searching for talent, should that lead us to believe that you'd be willing to trade the pick if it could help you get a veteran player?
I said, I mean, we're going to explore everything to give ourselves the best chance at acquiring players that will help us, you know, take a leap next year. So if it's trading the pick, you know, we'll talk about it. If it's drafting a guy, you know, we'll talk about that too. But our focus right now is trying to go into this summer and figure out how to make this team better using all of the resources that we'll have at our disposal.
What do you think, James Jones, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, what do you think is the timetable for a clarification on your status within the organization, what your role is going to be moving forward, and what sort of help you're going to have with the personnel department around you for the Phoenix Suns?
The season is only a week away, so I'm pretty sure within the next week we'll know something or move closer to a final resolution.
So you think it'll come relatively quickly once the season ends, you believe?
I believe so.
Jimmer got about 5-6 minutes the other night in that Cavs game, and that was and actually came in. He scored on a layup. He knocked down a jump shot. He got two free throws. Didn't get back into the game in the second half. Just got the 5 or 6 minutes, but scored 6 points. Where are you in the evaluation process of him? Is it difficult to evaluate him with him not getting any major minutes?
It is. I mean, game time, but we've had practices, Jimmer. Jimmer's a great teammate. He's a good player, a great shooter. I think you saw the excitement and reaction from his teammates when he finally got an opportunity to go out there and play. Made some shots, made a couple plays. Jimmer's such a high character teammate. You know, he gives us something that we desperately need. As a guy that's just excited to be out there competing and enjoys scoring the ball. And so I think he'll. You know, he's been good for us, and we'll take these last four games to watch him in game, but we're really focused on what he does off the floor because that's where his value is for us right now at the end of the season.
All right, who do you like in the Final Four? Who do you think comes away winning it all? No more Duke, no North Carolina. Virginia's still in it. Michigan State looked really good. Who do you like?
I'm a sleeper. I think Auburn. I think Auburn has a chance to surprise a lot of people just the way they play. You know, Bruce has those guys playing extremely well. And they're aggressive. And, you know, when your guards are aggressive and they're pushing the tempo and the pace, it makes it hard for the other team to keep up.
Good stuff, James. We appreciate it. As always, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for coming on for a few.
Got it. Thanks.
James Jones joining us. Culture Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Culture Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Many believe that if the Cardinals are going to trade Josh Rosen, it needs to happen sooner rather than later. But according to one NFL insider, that deadline next week isn't. We'll explain next here on the Burns and Gambo Show. So on the one hand today, you've got not one but two mock drafts, both suggesting that the Raiders will make a trade with the Cardinals in the number one spot and the Cardinals will move down and presumably keep Josh Rosen as their quarterback so that the Raiders can take Kyler Murray number one. MMQB's got a mock draft that says it. And what is it? DraftWire?
Two of them.
Yep. Has a mock draft that suggests the Raiders will move up from four, give up one of their additional first-round picks to move up to one to take
Kyler Murray. It's a new trend, right? And first it was everybody's got the Cardinals taking Murray. Now he's worked out for the Raiders. And everybody's like, yeah, let's readjust this. Maybe it's the Raiders move up to get him. I don't know if there'll probably be another trend at some point.
Sure.
But right now, a little bit of a trend going towards the Raiders getting the number one pick by trading with the Cardinals.
A week from now, who knows what the trend is going to be. But on the other side of that coin, you continue, as there continues to be widespread belief that the Cardinals will take Kyler Murray number one. It's nothing verifiable, just widespread belief that that's what they're going to do. Taking Kyler Murray means presumably trading Josh Rosen. Well, today on the NFL Network, Ian Rappaport chimed in on that, and this is something we talked about late last week and early this week. Is next Monday a deadline of sorts for the Cardinals to trade Rosen? Because that's the first day of the voluntary offseason workouts, and it might be awkward for everybody if he shows up, and he's not going to be the quarterback 3 weeks from now. Ian Rappaport said today, no, there is no deadline.
If, in fact, they do take Kyler Murray, there's a couple things that I am told. First of all, next week's offseason conditioning program, not an actual deadline. It's not like they do not feel like they need to trade Josh Rosen by then or else. It's not being treated like anything. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if next week came and gone and came and went and really nothing happened.
We talked about the story on Monday. You kind of offered the exact same opinion.
Thing. Yeah, I think he's going to show up. I think voluntary. You'll have a lot of guys show up. I'm not expecting him to not be there. I'm not expecting the agent to say anything. I think it looks, first of all, if Murray has some devastating injury a week from now and then you didn't show up, I mean, what kind of leader are you? Like, you're still the quarterback of this football team. You're being paid by this football team. Until they tell you you're not part of this team, you show up. You participate in what you need. You get ready to be the quarterback of this football team until they tell you you're not. You can't speculate. Okay, you can't speculate that, oh, I see all the rumors. I'm not going to show up because you may trade me. Unless they tell you we're trading you, don't come. Well, then don't come. But if they're not telling you not to come, you better show up. Because you were drafted by this team. They paid you a lot of money. It's your responsibility. It's your team until they tell you it's not your team.
Sure.
Be there at the voluntaries. I'm expecting that he's going
to
be there.
And there's no reason to get upset about him, upset at him when he hasn't even done the thing that we think he may or may not do, right? I mean, he might show up next week and, hey, I'm here, ready to go to work. And he's, you know, Josh Rosen is as SoCal cool as they get. And he'll answer every question about all the rumors in his Southern California cool kind of way. And he'll pass it off just fine if he chooses to do that. Let's just see what happens on Monday. Then Rappaport floated again this idea, and this idea still is out there, kind of lingering like a bad cough that you just can't get rid of during allergy season. The idea that the Cardinals could draft Murray and keep both of them on the roster at the same time.
They could, in fact, keep both quarterbacks until they decide not to. They are not going to give Josh Rosen away. And when they've compared Rosen to the other quarterbacks in this draft besides Kyler Murray, they think Rosen's better anyway. This is a guy they really, really like. So it is going to take a very, very good offer for them to trade Rosen if that is the direction they decide to go in, which, of course, they haven't decided yet.
Like, that's just somebody playing Rappaport as best they can. They're not just going to give him away. Got to get something for them. They're not just going to give them away.
They could keep both of them. Don't give us your terrible offer. Don't offer us a third-round pick for Josh Rosen because we just might keep them both.
If somebody told me that, I wouldn't report it because I know you're full of it. I know you're full of it. We might keep both unless we get a really great I'm not going with that because I know and you know that that's not true. You've got to trade him. You're not keeping Josh Rosen and Kyler Murray, and then Murray's your starting quarterback, and Rosen never plays, and then think you're going to get better value next year?
Yeah.
When he sat for an entire year for $2 million, and a team just lost 1 year of service for $2 million, you think you're going to get a better draft pick next year when he doesn't play?
The only way you could hold on to him, the only way, is if you could pull some sort of a Sam Bradford rabbit out of your hat like the Eagles did a couple years ago. Remember? Remember they drafted Carson Wentz
when Wentz got hurt.
When Teddy Bridgewater got hurt.
When Bridgewater got hurt,
they traded Sam Bradford to the Minnesota Vikings.
Right.
The only way you could possibly justify keeping both is to say we're going to hold on to one, and the one we like the least we'll trade in training camp in August in case some other starting quarterback goes down in the league, and then we'll have that in our back pocket just in case. And even then, to me, you're squandering the value that Josh Rosen is worth on the market, unless you're finding that Josh Rosen just isn't worth that much on the trade market.
Yeah, you take the best that you can.
If you're only getting third-round picks.
No, but if that's your best offer, you take the best offer.
That seems like a bad return on investment to give up draft picks, move up to number 10 to take Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like you're going to Potter for 50 cents on the dollar.
You are going to Potter for 50 cents on the dollar.
Okay, but you know what?
That's what that is.
Okay, but you know what?
That's the guy taking his money out of the Bailey savings and loan,
right?
You know, and running across the streets of Potter and leaving poor George Bailey out to dry along with his other investors.
Well, he was left with $2 and tried to make
that. Old man Potter will pay 50 cents on the dollar for every share you got. Yes, cash.
That's what it is.
50 cents on the dollar, old man Potter.
Giving up Rosen for a third-round pick, man, that's going to old man Potter and selling it for 50 cents on the dollar.
Okay, but you know what? 50 cents on the dollar or what? Keep him, and then maybe next year you get 30 cents on the dollar.
Keep him and believe in George Bailey. You keep him and you believe in the power of the Bailey building and loan. That's what you do. Don't bail on the building and loan. Keep your money in there.
Look at Zuzu's pedals!
Something else Rappaport said that kind of clicked there for
okay,
a
but
second.
Go ahead, finish your thought. He was played there. Okay, they're not like that scenario doesn't work. That's organizational talk. Well, we're only going to trade him unless we get a lot for him. We could keep both quarterbacks. No, you're not. You're not keeping both quarterbacks.
If he's just passing along what he's been told from somebody,
I know. But
that
if I was
trusts,
told that, I would never. You know? I would never. I would not say that if I was told that because I know it's full. I know they're full of it.
Mel Kiper this morning on Doug and Wolf. Good get from the guys in the morning. If Rosen was in this draft, where would he rank? That was something that Rappaport alluded to a second ago.
Well, Kyler Murray's a wild card, so we take him out of the equation. I would say he would be number one ahead of Dwayne Haskins. So Haskins is traditional, as is Josh Rosen. You would say Dwayne Haskins would be right behind Josh Rosen, and then with Kyler as the wild card, because he's certainly a unique, separate entity at 5'10". We've never had that before in the first round, let alone the number one pick overall. So I don't even put him in the grouping of traditional quarterbacks. So, again, Josh Rosen has value. And this notion all you can get is a second-round pick, well, I don't know if that's true or not. We'll see. But I got to believe if you're the Washington Redskins, would you rather have Josh Rosen or Daniel Jones? I'd rather have Josh Rosen.
Oh, I love what he just said about how, Murray's like a unique category. He's like unto himself. It's hard to compare.
But you have to compare him to Rosen. You have to. If you're doing your analysis of this draft and you're the Arizona Cardinals, you have to say that's got to be part of the analysis in the room. All right,
got to feel it. Yeah. Okay.
We've got a chance to choose between Kyler Murray and Josh Rosen. If Josh Rosen were available in this year's draft, who would we have graded higher? Who would we? And you can't throw out his uniqueness. You have to
take that into account.
You have to take that into account and make a decision which one you like better, because that goes into your final analysis. You can't just disregard his uniqueness. You have to figure out a way to accommodate it. Figure out a way to incorporate it into your evaluation of those two players. You have to. You don't have any choice.
I've always said you've got to not. I mean, you have to not believe that Rosen's going to be a star in this league. Because if you believe Rosen's going to be starting this league, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing?
What you're doing is you're playing the Raiders. You're trying to come up to number one. It's exactly what you're doing. You're playing the game is what you're doing. With their playoff hopes on the line, what's the status of Coyotes goalie Darcy Kuemper? We're going to have the head coach, Rick Tocchet. He's going to join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The head coach of your Arizona Coyotes, Rick Tocchet, with Burns and Gambo.
A weekly visit with the head coach of the Arizona Coyotes here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, and unfortunately comes on the heels of a tough loss last night at home to the LA Kings by a score of 3-1. Good afternoon, coach, and right out of the gates, how's Darcy feeling after what happened to him last night?
Yeah, he feels better today. We'll know a little bit more later in the day and probably tomorrow morning. So, but, you know, obviously it could have been a lot worse, you know, that stick right to his eye. So it's more of an abrasion than it actually poked him in the eye. So hopefully, you know, just for general health that he's okay.
You bring up Aiden Hill. You call him up today. What's your plans on who starts in goal tomorrow against Vegas?
Well, we won't know. We'll see how Kemps is. Obviously, picks ready to go if we need him. And Hilly's been playing in the playoffs, well, not the playoffs, but the last few games where Tucson's made the run here to make the playoffs. So they're in the thick of things, too. So, you know, we'll make a decision and see who's when we're ready to make that decision.
Taka was very emotional last night. I mean, you know, you're keeping an eye on the Colorado-Edmonton game, and Edmonton goes up 2-0, and you're thinking maybe they're going to be able to, you know, steal 2 points and give Colorado a loss at home, and then Colorado comes storming back, and, you know, they win it 6-2, and then you guys are up 1-0, and it was an emotional roller coaster for me because I'm rooting for you, and I want you to do well in the team, and you guys played your asses off last night. I mean, 50 shots on goal. You just ran into a buzzsaw. You ran into a goalie that was just not going to be denied. It's not like you played poorly, although I will talk about the power play in a second, but you just ran into a super hot goalie.
Yeah, you know, you got to find ways to get it done. You know, obviously I like the effort. I still think there were some plays out there that we rushed. I thought there was plays that we should have made. We didn't. It's kind of bit us all year where, you know, we got to make that play. You know, we've done a nice job being a resilient team, but, it's hard to score goals. And, we're not a team that gets easy goals. And, you know, we had a chance to go up 2-0. We didn't make it. And, you know, the goals we gave were just, you know, there were just a couple of meaningless breakdown goals. I think they only had about 5 or 6 chances all game. We had 20-something chances, and it's just that's the thing that happens. That's why pro sports is so unpredictable. You know, you play a real good game and you can lose.
How dejected was the locker room after the game, knowing that Colorado had won, knowing that you had lost, putting you guys on the brink of elimination? How dejected was that locker room?
It was quiet. You know, you could see a lot of people were down. You know, but like I said, we had a meeting today. I said to these guys, you know, think of this as if we win our game against Vegas and say Winnipeg, and Winnipeg not happy with their last game in Minnesota, you know Winnipeg is going to come out and play hard. Winnipeg beats Colorado. All of a sudden, you know, that last game, we want to put pressure on Colorado. Like, if there's pressure on that team, who knows? A lot of things can happen. There was a lot of energy in that room today. The practice was great. It was a short practice, but a lot of guys were, you know, smiles on their face, knowing that they have to bring those smiles and those energy if we've got to beat Vegas. And if we don't, then we'll reevaluate the year. But from now, we're not dead. You know, we got to put doubt in the Avalanche if they lose and we win. Then, you know, you got to step closer. That's the way we have to think.
Rick Tocchet, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, the head coach of the Arizona Coyotes, on their way to Vegas to take on the Golden Knights tomorrow night. Were you surprised at how, I don't want to say effortless, because I know you're putting effort in, but it sounds like today you didn't have to work that hard to motivate the guys after last night. Did you come into work today thinking this crew is going to need a little motivation after what happened last night?
You know what, I really believe that the team takes their temperament of the head coach sometimes. So if I come in tight, upset, I think your team will be that. And I think, you know, I went in, I made a joke, I talked about some scenarios, tried to keep them loose. And I think after that, I think they saw me being loose and can't wait to play that game in Vegas. And they just took off from there. So I think it was important for me. I think it was important for the coaching staff to have a really good attitude today in a work day and never say attitude. So I got to give the players a lot of credit because they fed off that.
Let's talk about the power play. 6 opportunities last night on the power play, no goals.
I think you're one for your last 20 or one for your last 21. How much has the inability to score on the power play hurt you guys over these last 2 weeks?
Well, it's been huge. I mean, you know, at this point, you don't worry about power play percentages. You worry about the time to score a power play goal. Obviously, we had, when it was 1-0, we had numerous opportunities to make it 2 and 3-0. You know, Alex Galchenyuk had a one-timer in open net, and he hit the goalie. Keller had 2 shots in the slot. You know, OEL had 2 shots from the point that were great shots, and we had rebounds sitting there, and Jack Campbell was swallowed them up, and they, did a nice job of stopping them. So the opportunities are there. You just got to continue to do the same thing, and, you got to make that play. I mean, this is a result-oriented business, and we need people to make plays. Like that. 0-for-6 is a big number.
Did anybody get caught at any point in the game, like looking at the score in the Colorado Edmonton game?
I don't think so. I think sometimes the arena, if Colorado was losing, Edmonton was winning, late in the third. Sometimes they'll put it on for the fans to get juice and maybe juice everybody up. But they did. They didn't. I don't think the players knew the score. I'm sure they. I'm sure they talked to some of their buddies or something. Somebody told them, but I did not know the score until after the second period.
Rick Tocchet, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. We obviously don't know the status of Darcy moving forward for the last 2 games, but in terms of what he's meant for all of this, all of the excitement we've all been feeling the last month as you guys have made this push, what has he meant in the final analysis for all of that?
Well, for me, it's what I've been preaching. If you look at his start of the year, he couldn't win a game. He initiated a meeting with our general manager and our goalie coach saying that it's not good enough. It's on him. He's got to start playing better. He's got to have a better, stronger mentality. So he put himself on the line. And since that day, he's been lights out, one of the best goalies in the league. His numbers are terrific. So that's what I want from our players. I want these guys to look at themselves and say, listen, I got to be better. I'll do whatever it takes. And I think it's a lesson learned for some guys on our team that, a guy like Kemper, or even Lyle Crouse, he wasn't dressed at the beginning of the year. He was really one of our most true players that if you put the time and work in, good things will happen for you.
What do we not know about the injury to Kemper? What would force you to keep him out? I mean, we saw the stick go up. It was accidental. We saw it go in between the face mask. You never see anything like that. You had to take him out of the game. I mean, is there an injury there? Is there something that you're monitoring?
Well, if it's blurry vision, they put some stuff in it to see if it works later today. So it's just a matter of if it's blurry or not, It's obviously, he's got some issues when it's blurry. Obviously, a goalie needs his eyes, right? So that's probably the only issue is that. And that is a big issue with a goalie. He needs his eyesight to stop pucks.
Was it blurry today?
Well, he had some stuff put in it, so I think that's just something that they just wanted to see how it reacted from whatever they put in. So right now, those things improve after a couple hours, after you put eye drops and all that stuff. It's like no difference to the eye doctor. They put stuff in your eye the day you'll see as well or whatever, and then it starts to come back. So I think that's where we're in the holding mode right now.
Yeah. So if he's capable of going, he goes just because you're still in this thing?
Yeah, of course. I mean, listen, plus Kemp's will probably kill me. I mean, if he's ready to go, if he tells me that he's fine, he's going in. No question.
Doc, good luck tomorrow night against Vegas. Thanks for coming on for a few minutes. We certainly appreciate it. And good luck the rest of the season, man. The next time we talk to you, one way or another, we're going to know how this thing turned out. So best of luck the rest of the way.
I appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Rick Tocchet joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Create your own player. Rise through the MLB ranks or play against others as baseball's greatest stars and legends. It's MLB The Show 19. It's rated E for everyone. Head on over to the rewards page at arizonasports.com. It's your chance to win a copy and dominate the competition. Many believe it was a Bush League play. So will and when should the Diamondbacks retaliate against Manny Machado? Plus, a development from today's D-backs game that you will want to hear about next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
And a drive to deep right field. Back on it goes Renfro, and he can't get it. Up against the wall. Peralta scores. Lamb hobbling into second base. Looks like he pulled a hamstring, and he falls down there on the bag. Jake Lamb really, as he was rounding first base heading to second, either the groin or the hamstring, but he really hobbled in. He's in a lot of pain on the ground.
That literally just happened about 5 minutes ago.
Oh, that's not good.
It's a final 4-1. The Padres beat the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks don't get the sweep, and they come back to Chase Field, 3-4 for their home opener Friday against Boston Red Sox. But the story is obviously Jake Lamb, who got his first start of the season against a left-handed pitcher, but he didn't do it at first. He did it over third to accommodate Christian Walker over first. We had wondered when Torrey was going to do that, and today he did. It was on his first extra base hit of the season. He hit that double, and you and I were both in here talking to the powers that be, and we saw it as it happened. He rounds first, and he gets about a third of the way there, and man, that left leg just grabbed at him, and he hobbled, could put absolutely no pressure on it as he got to the bag. Then he kind of crumpled when he got to the bag. He walked off under his own power, but he was limping big time on that left leg, and Schulte's absolutely right. It was either a hammy, a groin. It looked like at first he kind of grabbed the front of his leg. So I wasn't thinking hamstring at first, but he grabbed at that leg something good, and I got
a message in right now to try to find out how they're going to describe it, but I'm going to assume it's a hamstring injury.
Yep.
And you know those things, man. You're out for a while.
Yep.
You're out for a while. That's the toughest injury, a hamstring injury, because you know what I mean. You could feel good, like a week later you might feel okay. I feel good, and then you go for a jog and you tweak it.
It lingers.
Yeah, it does.
It can linger, and it never fully heals,
yep.
And you never really know when you can trust it to be healed. And the doctors can tell you, and the trainers can tell you, but you just don't know. So I'm going to assume he's headed to the injured list, the disabled list,
yes,
at some point, that he's going to miss, I don't know how much time, but enough that it's going to warrant putting him on the DL, to be sure, and that the Diamondbacks will once again have to make do without, okay, here we go. Three players that we all identified at the beginning of the season as guys who needed to have bounce-back years.
Souza, Lamb, Robbie Ray.
You're already down two of them.
Yeah.
You're already down
one,
two of
one
them.
One for the year.
Yep.
I mean, one for the entire year. And now, you know, this one could be, I mean, this could be, that was, I mean, it's not like this is not a season-ending injury for
Jake. Of course
not.
Lamb, no, of course not.
But, I mean, I'm just, you know, early guesses, 2 to 4 weeks, you know, with a hamstring injury like that. I mean, he pulled that. He pulled that pretty good. That's not something you come back from and you play on Friday.
No.
I mean, very unlikely that he's going to be playing anytime soon. You never know. We'll wait. We'll see what the diagnosis is. They'll get the doctors to look at it. But the way he pulled up on that thing, now he was able to walk off on his own. It wasn't that he had to hold on to two guys' shoulders and he limped off the field. He did walk off on his own, but that did not look good. And that's so Steven Souza, you're down Steven Souza. Now you're going to be down Jake Lamb. And now you can bring back Vargas, right? Because Vargas had been sent down for Duplantier.
Yes.
So you could bring back Vargas, and then I guess you could go back to Escobar at third.
Yep.
And Wilmer Flores at second.
And now Walker is your everyday first baseman. No matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you're going to have to do. In the meantime, this guy got his revenge today. He had a 2-run homer late in the game off of Matt Andrees. Last night, he was the talk of Diamondbacks baseball in their series against the Padres.
Here's the pitch to Machado, and he pops it up on the infield. Who wants it? And dropped by Murphy. And that is interference on Machado, who hit into John Ryan Murphy, I believe. And I think he's been called out. I think that's what I saw from the home plate umpire, Bill Wucky.
Andy Green lost his stuff coming out to yell at the home plate umpire about Manny Machado getting tossed for interference.
Out of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Green got kicked out of the game. Listen, here's the thing. This is why people hate Machado. That's a terrible play. You could flip the bat behind you, or you could hold on to the bat because you know it's in foul territory. You know the ball's in foul territory. You're seeing it's to the right of you. You know, so instead, you could hurt somebody like that. And that's where I was like, I was wondering if he was going to get plunked today or if they're going to plunk him at some point. This is why people don't like Machado. This is why the Dodgers couldn't wait to get rid of him. This is why the Yankees didn't want him. He flips the bat right by John Ryan Murphy's feet. I mean, if Murphy takes one step over to his right on a foul ball, maybe he trips over the bat. I mean, you got to think. Like, that's not what you do. Throw the bat behind you or hold on to the bat. but don't put it right where the catcher is. He's looking up in the air. He doesn't know that the bat's there. And what's the first thing that they, in Little League, they teach you to clear the bat? You know, when people are running or moving, right? The first thing you do when you round third base and you score, and another, you pick up the bat.
Pick up the bat and you get it out of the way.
Pick up the bat. I mean, you're always, I mean,
it's courtesy.
It's courtesy.
It's respect.
It is.
It's
you don't,
just the
but
game.
You don't,
it's
you don't
you do.
Throw a bat 2 feet away from where a guy's looking up at a pop fly. John Ryan Murphy ended up dropping that ball. Did he drop it because he heard the bat? Did he hear the bat land right next to him? I mean, I don't know why. But that was this is why people don't like Machado.
Sure.
I mean, this guy's a great, great player. Somebody, one of you guys, kind of related him to Grayson Allen.
Grayson Allen,
the Duke player, who was such a good player, but he was a dirty player. Well, Machado, that's you don't do that. You don't push the bat right by where the catcher is. That's awful. You get somebody hurt.
Jordan was the one who made the comp, and I thought it was a really good one because after a while, Grayson Allen was just so universally recognized as being a dirty player. He embraced it. You know, he sort of. He didn't try to deny it. He didn't try to scale it back. He didn't try to pretend that he wasn't. He's like, yeah, no, I'm kind of a dirty player.
Right.
And I'm going to go out there. I'm going to try and trip you. And I'm going to try and stick my leg out. And I'm going to try and make it look subtle. Like, I'm not trying to do it. But all you have to do is look at the video and you can tell what's going on. And Manny Machado's kind of the same way, whether he's kicking first baseman's feet at the bag like he was doing last year in the playoffs, or whether he's laying down a bat right at the feet of John Ryan Murphy, who, by the way, after the game was talking about it with reporters. Here was his reaction to it.
I'll be honest, I didn't even feel, maybe I felt something brush me. I don't know if it was him or the bat, but I mean, I had plenty of time to make that play. I just didn't do it.
Manny Machado was asked if he thought he interfered.
No, I mean, I hit fly ball, looked up, saw it, you know, put my head down, went to go run. I mean, I don't even think I touched him. He even said no. So, I mean, things happen on the ball field. I mean, as a player, we don't feel. I mean, I don't think I hit him. Maybe we see replay. Maybe I did. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I didn't see the replay yet, so I don't know. But as I was aware of, I don't think I touched him. No.
These were the kinds of things that we heard about him when he was in LA last year. That he was just not well liked. That he was not. That he just wasn't that good of a dude. Right?
Yes.
And you heard those things kind of in whispers and in chunks throughout the course of his time there. And did it affect his marketplace? I mean, obviously not. He got paid. He got paid a lot of money. He got paid one of the biggest contracts in the history of the game. So it didn't affect his marketplace too bad, obviously. But there were plenty of whispers around the game of just what a kind of bad character guy he was. And I think you saw it last night. And I got his revenge today. I mean, if that's what you want to call it, he had a two-run jack off of Matt Andrees to make it a 4-1 ball game at the time, 4-0 ball game at the time. So he did not get plunked today. There was no retaliation. But like you said earlier, I would imagine there will be at some point. I think.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be today. I think you wait on it. I mean, that's what teams usually do. I mean, you know, you're winning the games, you're winning the series, and this was a close game all the way through, so you don't want to put a batter on base. But, you know, the thing is, I mean, I think most players understand, look, you flip the bat backwards, or you could have just held on to it knowing it's going to be a foul ball. You know it's going to be a foul ball.
You don't
flip the bat right where the catcher is.
The Arizona Diamondbacks just tweeted out a moment ago, Jake Lamb was removed from today's D-backs game with what they're calling a strained left quad.
Quad muscle.
I had a feeling it was the front, not the back. He reached for the front of the muscle, not the back of the leg. I had a feeling it was something around there. So he's getting an MRI tomorrow. That, according to Zach Buchanan over at The Athletic. So MRI for Jake Lamb. Yep.
Boy, didn't it look like he grabbed the back at some point?
No, I thought he grabbed the front.
Just grabbed the front.
I thought he grabbed right above the left knee as soon as it happened. Above there on the front of the leg. So
we may not know anything until tomorrow. But quad injury for Jake Lamb, had to be taken out of the game. We'll see what the time frame is. Does he go on the disabled list? We'll know more tomorrow because obviously they'll be leaving San Diego now to come back.
More and more people are starting to bite. But is the Raiders' interest in Kyler Murray enough to make them trade up to the #1 pick? People are talking. You'll hear what they have to say next on the Burns and Gambo show.